Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic on Tour. I have a very special guest for you today, and that is, you may have heard of him, Count Dankula, who is a Scottish podcaster and general reprobate. So I've been a bit of a problem, you know. My people aren't here. I was literally sitting at the pub over the road waiting for the producers to come and tell me what to do. So I don't know if I'm doing this right. I'm looking at the camera. Apparently you do that. Is that how you do it?
Yeah, I believe so.
You'd look at the camera, right?
Yeah.
But then you'd look over at the guest.
Yeah,
when
you're addressing the audience.
Addressing the audience, don't look at the guest. And when you're addressing the person, don't look at the camera. I got it. So thank you for coming. Thank you for coming on your London tour. So first of all, do you mind asking, I mean, I liked Count Duckula when I was about 8 years old.
Yeah.
I think you're a bit younger than me. I think you're born late 80s, aren't you?
Yeah, I do vaguely remember Count Dankula, though.
So is that where it came from? Or how did Count Dankula manifest?
Well, that was the original sort of inspiration for the name. It was actually my wife that came up with it, because I was making I decided just to make a stupid meme channel. Not serious, just make silly videos with friends. And I did say to my wife, what would be a stupid sounding name for a meme channel? And she thought for a second and she said, Count Dankula. And I went, yeah, that's nice and stupid. So I just like put that in, and that's where the name for the channel came from. My wife came up with it.
Okay. And why did you want to start a channel? Where did you start the channel? Whenabouts did you sort of...
2015, but it was like, it was totally not serious in any way. I just wanted to make like dumb, silly videos with my friends and upload them. There was no aim to make a serious go of YouTube. I thought my videos were going to get 30 views max.
Right.
Like, and it would just be me and my friends, because this was just meant to be a little silly thing for me and them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't supposed to go places, but it did.
It did. Yeah. And so, I mean, there's not much, I must say, there's not much, okay, you've got your basically hit piece Wikipedia page, well done. Tell me a bit about your background. So where are you from in Scotland?
Grew up in Coatbridge, you know, working, no. Well, it was basically in Lanarkshire, working class mining town, shithole. This is shithole.
A shithole.
Yeah.
What is shithole about Coatbridge?
I can remember the local priest getting mugged at knife point by 2 14-year-olds.
That was in the papers, was it? The local priest?
I believe it or not, that wasn't big enough to make it into the papers, because a lot more stuff happens in Coatbridge, especially back then. It's calmed down a little now, but, you know, the poverty of the place hasn't exactly improved.
Sorry, can I cut?
Yeah.
Sorry, I can't see the timer on here. Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, yeah, right, bollocks. Right, back in. Cut. Okay, bollocks. Shit, fuck. I can't believe I didn't see that. That's very embarrassing. I've interfered with the flow. I had him on the ropes. I had him on the ropes, and he was about his poverty and about all the deep-fried heroin and whatever that he was consuming when he was a boy, which you did, presumably.
Yes, just a little. Yeah.
Basically, the two options at school for school careers was what, the skag and the paedophilia.
Yes, essentially. Yeah,
but that is Scotland's, no. I mean, the skag and the paedophilia, and they were like, Meehan, what do you want to do? And I want to be a YouTuber. And like, no, it's the skag and the paedophilia here. those are your options. I'll be here with your high and mighty ideas. It's the skag or the paedophilia. Which one are you going to go for? And then, what about a YouTuber? No, skag or paedophilia. Which one did you go for?
Skag.
Skag. Oh, fair enough.
Of course.
The paedophilia would be more. Yeah. So Coatbridge was not a nice place. Yeah. And so did you do hires or anything, or did you was it sort of the?
I did my hires. I went to college and I went to university.
Where did you go to college?
I went to Coatbridge College.
And where did you go to university?
University. I went to Glasgow Caledonian.
Okay. All right. What did you study?
Computer games design. As you can see, that career didn't exactly pan out. It was just unfortunate timing, because literally as soon as we all graduated and got our degrees, you know, there's about per year 3 jobs in the gaming industry in Scotland. But just as we all got our degrees, there was a studio in Aberdeen called High Res Studios. They went bankrupt and shut down. So there was a few hundred seasoned veteran game developers that were now in the job market.
They're now moving from Aberdeen down to Glasgow, the next biggest.
Basically, fresh university graduates didn't stand a chance against them.
No.
Yeah,
they were experienced and they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
So you're 21 by this time, presumably. You're 22, what is it, 4-year degree?
Yeah, roughly.
So this is what you were born, what, 87?
87.
Yeah, so 97, 07, 09. So 2009, something like that. So economic crash. So people buying fewer things.
Yeah.
People not taking on graduates. You're a bit. It wasn't like when I graduated, where they were throwing jobs at you. So a bit of a bugger, really. And you're from Coatbridge as well. So you're only you haven't got all the contacts. I mean, well, apart from presumably in the criminal underworld.
Essentially, yes. Yeah. It's hard to avoid that when you grow up in Coatbridge.
No. And it's all sort of projects. What do you call them?
We call them schemes.
Schemes. That's it. Yeah, schemes. Were you brought up in a scheme?
Yes, I was.
Yeah. So what did your dad do?
My dad was actually a firefighter.
Oh, that's quite a lot of money.
He's retired now.
But they have good money. They wouldn't get a council house.
Eventually, it was, because we still lived there for like years and years when he got his job and stuff like that. But then as he started to climb, like in the fire service, that's when we moved out.
So, you know that film, Sweet 16, that came in about 2000?
Glaswegian movie. Yeah, that was a great film.
It was a good film. They had to subtitle it at first in England because people couldn't understand it.
Yeah.
But I watched it in Aberdeen. I was at university there, and they didn't subtitle it. You just had to watch it. And I went with a Glaswegian friend. He thought it was brilliant.
It's a great movie.
It's fascinating. I mean, you think to yourself that Britain is a civilized country, but yet it's got areas like genuine. I mean, did you see things of that level?
I think the vast majority of Sweet 16 was filmed in Greenock. As far as areas with poverty goes, Greenock is one of the worst. That was a area outside of Glasgow, where essentially people that were released from prison or people who were a little bit of trouble, whenever they wanted a council house, let's get them out of the city.
Right.
Put them away over there in Greenock. But as a result, obviously, Greenock became, one of the worst.
But everyone's drinking and stealing and taking drugs and
essentially.
So is that Coatbridge?
Coatbridge was like that, because we had a thing called the Time Capsule, which was like a swimming pool. That was like the idea of entertainment for all the youths in the entire town. But I mean, after you go for like the eighth time, it gets a little bit old.
But for you, I mean, you went to university though.
Yeah,
I went to Polytechnic. University, but yeah. Would you say that you had more sort of advantages than most people from Coatbridge, or did your parents were more sort of pushing you, or you're just cleverer, or what?
I think it was just I had a little bit more like drive, because I know that obviously you can't just like graduate high school and then just I'm going to land in a six figure job. It doesn't work like that, unfortunately. You need to put a little bit of work in. You need to get a little bit of education, under your belt. And I did do that, and I thought, I'll just do it in video games design, but obviously I should have done more research into that actual job market, because jobs in that just don't go in Scotland. You have to move abroad, but the problem is the entire world are also wanting to move abroad for the
as we notice where we are now. although in other parts of London even more so, as we notice in Roehampton or whatever, it's fairly not English. As I noticed at Heathrow Airport when I flew in yesterday, and all the people that greet you are not exactly stereotypical British people.
I was in Bethnal Green the other day.
Why on earth did you want to go there?
I had a comedy show.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's funny. We played Spot the White Person. Very difficult game.
Very difficult game. Yeah, you've got to be observant.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you need to have a keen eye.
You've got to be keen as mustard. He's mixed race. He's Italian.
Is the jury still out on the Italians?
I believe so. I was watching The Godfather the other day, and when they let them into America in the 20s, there was a debate over this, and over Finns as well. They used to call them China Swedes.
China Swedes?
Yeah, and it wasn't accepted that they were white. It wasn't accepted that they were white till after the war. So you're like, you'd be playing off spot this. It's Finnish. It's an easier game now because whiteness has expanded.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Irish are accepted as white, the Scottish, So
you seem upset about that.
You've got to keep these things exclusive. And basically me and my friends and people I like.
Right.
And then that's that's basically
you're white if you're chill.
your wife, I like you. I'm Ad Fontes, and I think Duncula. I got it wrong once and said it was Duncula. I don't know why. Good. So what did you do then? So you left university and then you buggered. What did you do?
Left university and obviously no job, so I ended up just working in a bunch of call centres a lot, which are just bargain bin jobs. Basically, every single person that lives in Scotland that's about my age at one point in their life has worked in a call centre because they made up it. At one point, it was like 50% of the jobs. You went on any of the job websites, all call centres, every single one of them, which is...
Because people like the Scottish accent.
I just think it's weird that call centres were so popular in a country where most people can't understand what the fuck you're saying. That man, which was obviously an issue for a lot of people. But I worked in that for a wee while, you know, just chop and change, because you know, sometimes if you was one with a little bit more pay, you just jumped ship and went to that one, because, you know, what's the difference? You're on the phone getting yelled at all the time, so it didn't make much difference. Might as well try and get more money out of it. But then...
Are these at, like, inconvenient times, like the middle of the night or whatever, or are they...
No, it was pretty regular, like, always working weekends and stuff like that, which was kind of annoying, but hey-ho. It was mostly stuff like banks, technical support, like that type of stuff that I was doing. But then after a little while, I worked in Tesco and all that for a little while as well. Mm-hmm. You know, just like stock control, just basic stock room, counting things. I counted boxes in a big warehouse.
So all that mathematical skill that you need for programming and you're putting it to excellent use.
Yeah, it's a common thing. Like, you're getting loads of people that are going to university and getting these degrees, and they are very qualified to an extent, but there's no jobs.
My Uber driver on the way here was Polish, and he has a degree in philosophy from a Polish university, is an artist, and was showing me the art that he exhibits and whatever, and was a novice monk. And he's driving an Uber.
There's lots of wasted talent.
So that is wasted talent. I mean, he's a very good driver. and it was an interesting half hour chat, I have to say. I mean, if Uber's got involved tipping, I would have tipped for that. But it was, come on. I mean, this guy could be doing more. It's a bit of a problem. So was this rather soul destroying? Did this make you think about the nature of life and contemplate reality and darkness and death and that kind of thing?
Oh no, absolutely. I was wondering why there weren't more and decent jobs all the time, because I was always on job websites looking for the next big thing. Some employers get a bit finicky about that. You were only at this place for 3 months. Why was that? Oh, because something better came up. Well, that's not good. We'll pay me more then.
Yeah, like, we want someone that's committed to an extremely dull and soul-destroying job.
Yeah, oh, minimum wage. And it's like, yeah, well, basically, see, if every single job is minimum wage, I'm going to go for the easiest job because I make the same money at the end of the day, which is why I ended up going into security. First, it was static security, like garden building sites and stuff like that. Basically, you sat in a little cabin and watched movies for 12 hours. So you see the stereotype you see in movies of the security guard with his feet up, not paying attention? That was me.
Yeah, like in Human Centipede 2.
I actually haven't seen any of the Human Centipede movies.
Are you sure?
I know that the first one's considered quite a cultural...
Film. Oh, you got it. And I couldn't believe it. It's such a bizarre idea. I only found out about it via the South Park satire of it. There was a South Park episode.
I've seen that one, Human Centipad.
And I watched that, and I thought, wow, what a hilarious episode of South Park. And then I realised, oh, no, it's actually satirising a real film that exists.
Yeah.
that someone beyond Trey Parker or whatever his name is came up with this.
He's actually on the wall there. He's been in this room.
Has he been in this room?
Yeah, he has.
He's breathed the same air. Well, no, not really the same air. That's nonsense. But you know what I mean. Good heavens. Who else is on the wall there? It's not really relevant. Getting off topic. Now, before we continue with our video, I want to share something very exciting with you. If you have been following my content for a while, then you will surely have heard of The Bell Curve by Charles Murray and Richard Herrnstein. The Bell Curve was one of the most important books in IQ research ever, and even though it came out in 1994, it remains a milestone in this area of research. It actually got both of the authors cancelled because they were not prepared to be silent about the important issue of race differences in IQ, which of course are largely genetic. Now, the only real problem with the bell curve is that it's almost 1,000 pages long. None of your internet TikTok generation has the attention span to cope with this. But now you don't have to, because you can easily listen to a detailed summary of the bell curve and its core ideas in just 20 minutes on Leagent.com. Leagent also has shorts and many other based books, such as my own, The Past is a Future Country, and many, many more. You can listen to all of them in about 25 minutes while you're on your commute to work, while you're working out, or whatever you guys do when you're not watching my videos. So go to Leagent.com and sign up with my promo code of TJH for a 10% discount. Good. So you were doing that for a bit, and it sounds awful. Was this what motivated you? You were just bored, so you thought you'd set up a YouTube channel, or what?
That was essentially it, because I was doing the private security, but I was also a bouncer.
Did you have to do any nightclubs? Did you have to give anybody a bit of a, you know?
At nightclubs, yeah, occasionally. Basically, guys on cocaine are. I hate them. I hated them so much. See, the boorish, laddish. Like, I don't mind laddish behaviour. I hate cocaine laddish behaviour. Mm. I hate those guys. Especially when you go up to throw them out and they think they're going to show off in front of their friends, and basically they can't look like a bitch in front of their friends, so they fight you and everything. And that was me for about 10 pounds.
Aren't the bouncers meant to avoid, like, just basically stop people getting drugs into the old clubs?
We try. We try, but the problem is we also need assistance from the venue owners.
I was under the impression that if you find people dealing drugs in a club, then probably the bouncers are corrupt and in on it, and you'd better be careful kind of what you're... Like, I was once in a nightclub in Aberdeen in about 2002, and this guy was openly dealing drugs.
Yeah.
And then my friend, who was another PhD student, started pissing him off, like annoying him.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, you shouldn't do drugs, oh, it's very bad for you, oh, all this crap. And I was like, oh, God, look, Jonathan, the fact that he is openly dealing drugs in this club strongly implies, because this guy's getting angrier and angrier, that those bouncers over there, they're not going to protect you, because they're getting a cut, and you're pissing him off. And then eventually I just said to him and the girls that were with us, I said, look, we've got to leave now. We're leaving now, And then like, no more than 6 months later, that club was shut down. For allowing the dealing of drugs in the club.
God's sake. Like, I never allowed any of that. I basically would go to the owner, what are the house rules? And of course, one of the number one ones was no drugs. So I was like, cool, no drugs in the building then. But see the amount of times where I've been in the toilet and I would like go into the toilets and I would just like wash my hands acting like I was just another punter. And then you would just hear from one of the cubicles. And that's when I would knock the door. And that got quite ingrained in me, because even years later, after I stopped being a bouncer, I was actually at a club in London at some event. And I just went for a piss and I was washing my hands. And I heard that come from the cubicle. And I turned around automatically like, wait a minute, I don't fucking work here. And I was like, I stopped being a bouncer years ago.
To intervene.
I was like, that was Pavlovian. Jesus Christ.
It's interesting how that gets put into.
Yeah.
I thought, because I was a journalist for a local English language newspaper in Oulu, for where I live, for 5 years. And it's built into me that if there's something interesting in Oulu that happens, I think, oh, that'd be a good article for the newspaper.
Yeah.
And I thought, hang on, I haven't worked there since 2012. Why am I? It's in me. There's the light festival.
I suppose still having that level of like observation ingrained in you is like good. You know, that's a benefit that you got from having that kind of career.
I suppose so. Yeah, I suppose so. There's that and writing in a fluent way.
Yeah.
Where were you? Were you about with Glasgow, or where were you doing it?
I was all over the place, especially with the static security, because we used to do the wind farms, because basically there's a certain demographic that really like copper.
What so- demographic? You can see, look, we are... that demographic being...
They move around a lot, like, yeah.
Yeah, 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 they like horse fairs.
Yes, thoroughly enjoy copper, so basically when all the wind farms were getting built, it was our job to guard all of the copper that was being laid in the roads. Once it was buried, that's when we could leave, but when the holes were open and the copper was being laid and the workers all went home for the night, so there's lots of copper just lying out everywhere, you know, that's when we had to stay overnight and guard it to make sure it was still there in the morning.
And did you have any incidents where gypsies, you literally came in front of you and tried to steal copper?
I never had any incidents doing private security. Sometimes when I was doing like a new housing estate that was being built, I had some kids smashing windows and stuff like that. That was it. That was the most I ever had when I was doing the static security. When I was doing the nightclub bouncing, there was a lot of...
But this is in Scotland?
This is in Scotland.
Yeah. I didn't know there were that many travellers in Scotland. I thought it was mainly...
Oh, yes, there is. Yeah, there's quite a lot. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I know that they're sort of around sort of Bedfordshire and the home counties around there. I wasn't.
Oh no, we've got them. We've got quite a lot up there.
Yeah. It's fair. Now I did meet one. Yeah, Aberdeen University. Okay, but that's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. The nightclub though, that was Glasgow nightclubs and stuff like that. Or whereabouts were you?
Sometimes I was in Glasgow to cover a shift. Most of my stuff was, you know, in the outskirts and around town and stuff like that. Like, there was a few pubs where I was like the regular bouncer. There was one pub for a time where I was the head doorman.
Did it ever get serious and uncalled and heavy?
There was a night where this was just extremely fortunate, where I closed my eyes just in time. Basically, usual story, by the way, just for anyone that's interested, 9 out of 10 fights that happen in nightclubs is because of a woman.
As an evolutionary psychologist, this doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, basically, you know what it is, all those pheromones in the air, everybody's drunk and on cocaine, things happen. But basically...
Two men rivaling for a lady.
That essentially is what it was. Basically, a girl turned up with her new boyfriend, her ex-boyfriend was there, he went up and said a few things. It all kicked off. Basically, two groups of people charged at each other. You know, it was like that Kingdom of Heaven scene, just two sides of the club, and there was only three of us.
Like Braveheart.
Yeah, so we were in the middle trying to break everybody up, and one of the guys, a big lad, he was about 6'8", he was massive, so he was doing very, very well in the fight, but unfortunately he was doing a lot of damage to people, so we ran in to try and take him and get him outside. But what happened, I can remember seeing this, it was like slow motion. I seen the woman in question run and like used a table and chair as a stepping stone to like leap through the air. See, like Space Jam, remember the end of Space Jam where Michael Jordan's arms just extending right out, the big slow motion slam dunk? She was doing that, except it was a glass onto his head, like that.
So, onto his head? Onto the ex-boyfriend?
Onto the ex-boyfriend's head.
Oh, good on her.
But basically, I was in front of him, so see when the glass smashed on his head, luckily I just shut my eyes just in time and all the glass hit me in the face.
Oh,
and
fuck.
All that, and I remember it hurt me, and I kept my eyes closed and started doing that, going, shit, there's glass, like, in my face, and it was little, it wasn't even big, it was the little tiny bits, and I was like, I can't let any of that get into my
sort
eye.
Of mini Hellraiser.
Yeah, but I turned around and I had my eyes closed, and I was like that, and that was when, that actually helped stop the fight, because apparently everyone that was fighting seen that, and everyone went, oh, fuck. We might have just blinded the bouncer, but fortunately I was fine. I did have some, like, little tiny cuts, like, around my eyes, but none went into my eyes, thankfully. But that was a night where, yeah, I could have been blinded. So, yeah, that was bad.
That's pretty bad. And yeah. That was in Glasgow or something?
That was in Glasgow. No, that was actually in Cumbernauld.
Cumbernauld? Yeah. What's it called? Cumbernauld. That was the slogan. Yeah. I have a friend who lives in, who was from Dunfermline.
Yeah,
and when
they were
promoting... They want you to, basically, it's just a big council estate. They want you to move to Cumbernauld, and there was TV commercials.
What's why?
I don't know.
Why would you? Have you seen their Main Street? By the way, see how people like to bitch about modern architecture? There is a place there just called the Main Street. It's called the Bridge. Look it up online. It is the most horrendous construction that has ever been made in Scotland. It is the worst thing. I'll show you pictures of it after.
Paul
this.
Joseph Watson should do a little potluck, should go there and
I'll take him just to watch him cry. I mean, cry at the sight of this monstrosity.
Cry glass from his eyes. Cumbernauld, I'm told, chaps, is not the prettiest.
The people that live there will tell you that right off the bat. Yeah, shit here.
It's the Milton Keynes of Scotland, I think. It's it's not that good. Anyway, so you did all these different, gig economy sort of work. And that's what you were doing when your YouTube channel...
Yeah, I was still doing it, even after, you know, things kicked off with a certain event involving a pug. I was still doing that work, or at least I was trying to do that work. But the problem is, people kept finding out my employers and stuff like that, and people kept phoning them up and going, do you know that you have a Nazi working for you? And there was a bunch of places that I got fired from. And I was doing my best to try and, like, keep jobs and everything, because that was the thing, like, YouTube was, I didn't go, oh, all this has kicked off, I'm going to go into YouTube. I tried to just go back to a regular life. I didn't go, oh, I've got a viral video, I'm going to strike while the iron's hot and build a career in YouTube. No, I tried to just go back to being a regular guy, but the problem is all the people that now hated me wouldn't let me do that.
No, but let's look at that, though. So let's go back in time to, what year was it?
It was 2016.
2016, yeah. And you're living with your girlfriend or something, or wife, and you've got this little, I wouldn't say pretty little dog, because that would be bollocks, wouldn't it?
But oh, no, they're horrendous, ugly
you've
little
You've got
creatures.
This ugly, hideous dog. Yeah, you could get a Springer Spaniel, a Cocker, or any kind of beautiful dogs there are, but why on earth would you want to get a pug?
Well, she already had the pug when you started
Why
does
she want to get a pug?
Because she's a woman.
Because they look like babies, ugly babies.
Yeah. They're cute little things to women, so...
Okay, all right. Okay, so you had the pug, and you'd thought one day... did you see it doing something a bit like a Nazi?
It was. He used to give a paw. He was still kind of a puppy. I think he was only about a year old, maybe. Maybe about 2 years old, like when this first started. But she was just constantly going on, look how adorable he is. Oh, look how cute he is. Yes, look at him. And she was picking him up and shoving him in my face, going, look at his wee face, and everyone. She was just so obsessed with how cute the dog was. So I just, this all sort of happened in the space of a day where I went to just give him a biscuit because, you know, he's a good dog. I'll give him a wee biscuit.
Good dog.
And have him,
what's his name?
Buddha, because when he was a puppy, he was very fat. So, oh, okay. But basically, I went to give him a biscuit and he'd done that with his paw up to give me a paw. And I was like, oh, that kind of looks like a little salute. And then I went. And I just thought of, oh, I have the opportunity to do something that's going to make her really fucking angry. And I went, yeah, here we go. So over the course of a week, I think it was about 5 days it took me to teach him to do it. But I also decided to change her. Usually if you said like biscuit, like that, like that's when he would perk up. Like most dogs do, if you say biscuit, they perk up and they get really excited. I managed to change the command word for it. I got him to start associating biscuit with the phrase gas the juice. So that he would react.
Why not Zig Heil? Why gas the juice?
Well, that came later. That was a second command that I incorporated. Where basically, I
would have thought the gas juice would be quite a long phrase to get a dog to associate.
Oh, well, he learned it fast. Yeah, he learned it pretty fast. So anytime I said gas the juice, he would like perk up, get dead excited, jump around and stuff like that. And then I taught him to, whenever I had the biscuit and I said Zig Heil, he would lift his paw like a Nazi salute.
Mm.
And obviously, I would give him his basket. Like, you've done the trick. You've done the work.
Yeah, don't tease them.
Yeah, I know, that's cruel.
Like children, it's cruel.
Well, yeah, exactly. But I decided the problem was he didn't do it every single time.
Ah.
Because, you know, the training takes a little bit more than 5 days. So what I'd done was I filmed a bunch of the times where he did do it. And the plan was I put the video on my YouTube channel. And my wife doesn't watch my YouTube. Even to this day, she doesn't watch my YouTube channel.
Yeah, my wife doesn't watch my YouTube channel.
Yeah. It's just that she doesn't. Our side of the my wife's very, very normie. She's lovely. I love my wife dearly. But she's very normie. See anything to do with politics, she's just like, she doesn't.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah, she doesn't bother with it. So I filmed it, put it on my YouTube channel, which she didn't watch, so it doesn't matter. A few of my friends seen it. And someone, I don't know how this deeply buried video on this little channel that had like 8 subscribers somewhere. Yeah. Someone found it, posted it on Reddit.
Someone who wants to be offended.
And no, the person who posted it seemed to find it funny.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they posted it on Reddit and went, oh, look at this, it ended up on the front page of Reddit. But while all of that was happening, like, because the video was up for like 3 weeks, nothing. It was just a little ha-ha, and then I moved on with my life. That was it. The video was up for about 3 weeks, and then I was going to a gaming convention, like, in Iceland, and while I was on the plane is when it got posted to Reddit and made it to the front page, and then I went to Iceland, went to Reykjavik. Now, because I'm in a foreign country, my phone has no signal, so I have no idea that back home, everything's blowing up.
You were happily looking around the penis museum?
I never went there. I went to all the bars and bankrupted myself because of the price of alcohol in Iceland. So that was like the first night. Went out, met my friends, and went back to the hotel room, woke up in the morning very, very groggy and went, oh, the hotel has Wi-Fi. Connected my phone to the Wi-Fi and I had like a million notifications come through on my phone all at once. And I was just like, what the hell? You have 18 missed calls. You have 18 voicemails. And I was like, what the hell? And I just phoned my wife and I was like, what the hell's happening? And she went, why are there journalists at the door?
How did they know your address?
Don't know. But there was a lot of suspicious stuff for journalists. But basically, I was kind of like, oh, what the hell? What the hell's going on? They all wanted to talk to me. They all wanted to do interviews. Now, I hadn't had any dealings with the press at this point, so I was a little bit green back then. And they were like, oh, we just want you to tell your side of the story. You know, we think you're a really nice guy, so we think it would benefit. Ah, shit. Like, you know, I fell for it, because journalists are serpents. They're like serpents. They don't care about burning your life down. They don't care about getting it fair, especially not these types that were coming after me. So I stupidly like did interviews and like did, you know, gave comments and all that type of stuff to them. And then they wrote exactly the stuff, a big, bad Nazi, right, winger, fascist, blah, 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 all the usual crap. And then I just was still in Iceland, still having a great time. And then I came home and my friends were making jokes going, oh, the police are going to be waiting for you at the airport. And I was kind of like, no, they won't. And I was a bit like, shit. Well, what if they are? Well, they weren't, but they did come and get me 3 days after I came home. They came to the house, and this was the weird thing, is for a few days after it, there were journalists in the street. However, I said to the local youths, if you see them, ask them kindly to leave. So,
and ask them kindly in Scots.
Yeah.
It means a different thing from in English.
Yeah, so they got rid of them. They got rid of the journalists. So there was no journalists for days. You know, I was constantly cutting, twitching, seeing who was out there, seeing if there was anyone sitting in a car down the street and everything like that, which at one point there was, but we moved them on. But no journalists or anything for days, and then all of a sudden, knock at the door, it's the police. And they came in and went, I imagine you know why we're here. And I was like, ah, yeah, I've got a pretty good idea.
Tickets.
Yeah. So they basically just flat out said, well, we're here to arrest you. You're under arrest.
Now, that I find amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the Orwellian society we're in. That's the complete lack of free speech that the subhuman scum that voted for New Labour ever.
Yeah.
Have helped to bring about, because I cannot understand how it is inciting racial hatred or anything like that to teach a dog to go to raise its paw in response to saying Sieg Heil or whatever. I mean, gas the Jews possibly, but Sieg Heil, or even that. No, it's meant as a joke. I cannot comprehend it. How the law anyone can. And we've just had a case about free speech like this in Finland, where a woman called Päivi Räsänen, who used to be the interior minister, was been prosecuted twice and failed to be convicted because she posted a quote from Leviticus on Twitter about gays.
Oh, that one, right? Okay, but that's freedom of religion.
And the, well, no, that's yeah. it was the law in Finland is that you can't basically insult a minority, a protected minority, and that includes homosexuals. And I thought to myself, it's not insulting them; it's quoting the Bible.
Yeah.
And the left wing press were saying, oh, you know, that the prosecutor was almost willfully misparaphrasing what this woman had said and done. There's other things.
Prosecutors don't really care about objective truth. Their job's to win at any cost, like that. So that's why.
But I can't comprehend how it could occur to anybody that it could be a crime to do. Well, tell me what happened anyway.
They just basically says, well, we're here to arrest you. And my wife immediately kicked off. She was still my girlfriend at the time. I hadn't married her yet. So she kicked off. She was very, very upset, which upset me. Because it wasn't my first rodeo. I've been arrested a bunch of times.
She didn't want, like, for example, the pug to come to your wedding.
The pugs were at the wedding. They were there.
They weren't incited to to do the little thing.
Some guests were coming up and getting them to do it. Yeah, but it's funny. But it ended up, I got arrested, and this was the weird thing. No journalists for days. And then I went outside, loads of journalists, all taking my picture. And I was like, how did you know the exact time of my arrest? And it wasn't until I got kept in jail overnight.
In jail overnight?
Yeah, because it was a hate crime, I was kept in. Which was
you were a danger to society or something.
It was hilarious though, because see, as I got taken to the, I get taken down to the station, it was Coatbridge Police Station, I get kept in a cell and everything, and it was a really amusing night, because I used to get arrested a lot when I was younger for fighting, right? You know, Coatbridge, it's just what happens, right? Never convicted.
Well, hang on, if I may.
Yeah.
I've never been arrested. You might not believe it, but I genuinely have never been arrested. I'm quite fascinated to know how on earth you got yourself into a situation when you were younger, where you've been arrested not just once but more than that. I mean, why?
Fighting.
Why did you do that?
I don't. I can't even remember what most of them were about. It was usually someone said something about me that I disliked.
Right. So you just see the red mist and have to smash their face in?
No, it was just the way things were done back then. You know, if you had a problem with someone, you had a fight, then you both got up, shook hands if you wanted to, you know, if that was considered resolved, and then that was it. The problem was finished.
Why not just have a little conversation?
I don't know. That was the way I saw everybody else doing it then, so that's just the way I did it.
After
it, you were still friends. You know, once you'd had your fight, that was it. The situation was, I don't do it anymore, you know, obviously, but that was just the way things were done back then. That was, you know, conflict resolution.
Oh, I don't know. When I turned up here earlier and there was no producers to let me in, I was pretty angry.
I noticed that.
You may have noticed from my tone.
Yeah.
I was not happy. And I think if someone had been there, I could have kicked off, mate. I could have gone full South London, full Wimbledon, full Coatbridge. All right. Anyway, yeah. Carry on. So you've been arrested numerous times because you're a thug, and because you're just, you know, yob basically.
Yes.
And you know, far right thug. I mean, that's
That was a far right yob was actually the one that was used the most, funnily enough. But basically, like, I got taken to the cells and everything, but, like, the guys who were like the custodians of the cells, you know, they bring you your food, they come in and check on you, make sure you're all right. They were very, very nice to me. They were even standing in the cell. They were just opening the door and coming in to talk to me because obviously they realised this man is not a danger. Because one actually had to come in and go, is that really what you were arrested for? And I was like, yes, that is what I was arrested for. And even they were kind of like, what the fuck? Like seriously? And everyone, they went, look, we have to keep you here for court tomorrow because it's a hate crime. And everyone, and they were like, but there's nothing we can do about it, sorry. And I was like, no, don't worry, it's fine. But there was a really interesting thing. Later in the night, this was like 3 o'clock in the morning or something, I just heard like screaming. Like, I'm just like lying on the floor trying to sleep and I just hear like screaming. So I get up thinking like, what the hell is going on? So I look through the little porthole in the cell door and the police have got this guy in like a Superman carry. He's like flat and there's like six officers dragging this guy into this cell. He's screaming, he's kicking, they're all restraining him. They fling him in the cell. They obviously just threw him to the other side and slammed the door shut. And this guy's like punching the doors, kicking the walls and screaming. And that was my soundtrack for the entire night while I was trying to sleep.
On the floor?
Yeah, I was a little mat on the floor, but I ended up like kicking and banging the door myself, telling him to shut the fuck up because I was trying to sleep. So he started shouting at me and I started shouting at him, you know, through the doors at each other and everything. And then the next morning when we were all getting escorted to get taken to court, I did say to the custodians going, who was that fucking roaster that you put in the next cell?
The custodian.
To me, no, the guy turned, they leaned into me and went, he murdered his friend. And I was like, oh, right, I was kind of like, wow, making friends already. I hope I don't go to prison, man, because I was just shouting at this guy that just killed a man. But basically, I got put into the escort van, you know, where you go in and you get your little cubicle that you're handcuffed to the floor in and everything.
No, I don't.
Oh, well, I actually recognised a friend of mine that was in there as well. Which was good. Basically,
Skag or the paedophilia? His
is a bit more. He's a very violent man. He's one of these friends where you only get to see him for about a month or two at the time before he's back in prison. He's one of those guys. But I recognise him and I was like, I'm not going to say his name, but I was like, oh, fuck, how you doing? Like just, so we were sitting shouting through the bit at the top, like talking to each other. He allegedly slashed a man with a meat cleaver.
Right.
Allegedly. He did it. Yeah. He went to prison. But ended up, I was sitting just chatting to him, went to court, got put into the communal cell. So it's like basically me and like about, I think, 10, maybe 11, 12, like other guys who are all waiting for court.
But these are real criminals then, presumably.
Oh, yeah. They, everyone did the whole, what are you in for?
Yeah, these like Scottish hard men.
Oh, yeah. Some of them were still like patched and stitched up, you know, from whatever, you know, had happened to them like the night before and everything. And it did the whole, what are you in for? Thing.
Mm.
So everyone's saying some
murder,
pretty fucking serious stuff.
GBH. Yeah.
Yeah, but then it gets to me, and I was like, I made a funny meme video with my pug, and like three of them went, that was you. And they were all like, we were all laughing about it, and we were all having a laugh. And there was a thing that was quite sad, though, which is there was this guy, quite a young guy, sitting, like, he was just sitting squatting in the corner, obviously very nervous being in this room. He's never been in a room or a situation like this before with some, like, genuine crazy people, like, essentially. So he was not really talking, but eventually he piped up and he said, if it's your first offence, like, what happens to you? And we were like, usually admonished by the judge, you just get yelled at and stuff like that. If I ever see you in front of me again, you know, blah, 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 like, get out. Like, that type of thing. And that's when we were like, well, it depends. What did you do? And he said, I got caught with a kilo of cocaine.
A kilo?
The entire room erupted into laughter and everyone was going, no, you're fucked. You are absolutely fucked. And you just saw the colour drain from the guy's face and he just had this immediate, like...
Well, he must have known that if you got a kilo of cocaine...
I think he was like 19 or something. He was an idiot. He was stupid, obviously.
You'd get like 6 years for that.
Oh, five minimum. Like, that's the minimum sentence you can get for something like that. So he just stared at the ground and you just saw his eyes glaze and just the colour drained from his face. And some people tried to be nice, like, well, maybe not if you've got, like, a really, really good lawyer and all that. But we were all looking at each other like, no, he's fucked. But I was essentially just immediately released after that. I didn't even have to go up to see the judge. I got granted something, I forget what it was called, where basically I just get immediately released and then I get my court date in the post and all that. So basically, some of the guys in the room weren't very happy when they just came in and went, like, Mark Meakin, you can go. And I turned around like, bye, like, because some of these guys were looking at like 7, 8, 9 years.
Certainly our 19-year-old a kilo of cocaine.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But then after that, it was got my court dates, and every time I went to court, I was surrounded by journalists all the time, and every time I sneezed or farted, it ended up in the papers. I had journalists harassing my family as well. I even had them phoning like my gran.
So
well.
your wife, do you mind my asking?
Yeah.
And we can cut this if he doesn't.
Yeah.
She's a normie, you said.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is obviously going to be quite difficult for her.
She had a very hard time.
Tell me, could you want to, yeah. I mean, without giving too many specifics, do you want to...
It was... Any time that the concept of, like, any time the idea of me going to jail got brought up, you would just see her eyes tear up and she would have to leave the room. She didn't handle it very well, and basically we had to sit down. I had to kind of like force it. I had to sit her down and go, look, we need to have a chat about this. There's a chance that I could be going to prison. We need to have a talk about what's going to happen, XYZ, how are you going to manage the house, like, etc., all that type of stuff. And basically there was a lot of tears from her during that, because she didn't want to think about it. She was kind of trying to, I'm not saying this like to denigrate her, she was trying to bury her head in the sand a little bit and just kind of like, no, everything's fine.
I mean, you
fine.
Give me the impression that she, I don't know what it is that clicks with you, because you're such an eccentric and an outrageous person. And I mean, from the, even before you did this, I assume you were covered in tattoos even before you did this.
Yeah.
And you give me the impression that she's very different from that, that she's sort of what we might call, I don't know, wife material.
Yeah.
You know, like just like
a. Well,
like,
she's covered in tattoos as well.
Oh. All right. Well, in your world, perhaps that's
fine. It's fine. She's not mental or crazy. She's actually very normal, which is why she got the ring.
Got the what?
Got the ring. We married.
Oh, you got the ring. That's a phrase that means we married, is it?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Why you got married? Mm. Okay. Yes. And you have children.
Yes, 2 kids.
Yeah, but that was after the incident.
Oh, this was much after. Yeah. My oldest is 2.5. My youngest is 8 months.
Right? Oh, you poor fellow. The 2.5-year-old is going to be extremely jealous. Already, I would imagine. I had a 3-year gap between my kids, and she was very jealous. She was excited when my wife was pregnant.
Yeah.
I'm excited. She was like, oh, Mahavalva, which means tummy baby. Oh, Mahavalva, Mr. Tule Mahavalva, when's the tummy baby coming?
Yeah.
And then the Mahavalva came, and she was all excited, and then she was very jealous very, very quickly. And she said, I want it to be just like it was. I want it to be me, daddy, and Itie. Which was mother, and we shouldn't have had enough. But then I'm an only child, and if you don't have enough, if you don't have at least one child, 2 children, then you're basically putting all the pressure on one child to do all the, you know, looking after the parents, and also you're basically allowing the death of your people. So
that too, I'm doing my best to save the weight race.
Yeah. So she must have been. I mean, were there lots of arguments? I mean,
It was a very stressful time. It was. It was like very, very stressful, especially because all throughout it, I couldn't get work. So she was still working at the time, and so she was basically having to support me. I was trying to like make some money here and there where I could. It was just like odd jobs. Like very occasionally, I would get a text saying, "Oh, we've got a security gig, which you can do because it's static security, away out in bumfuck nowhere. No one's going to see you. No one's going to recognise you." So basically, some of the security companies, I was still sort of working as like a contractor, not officially on the books. So I was still getting like the odd shift here and there, but it just became difficult. But then I was still in touch with most of the YouTubers that reached out to me, that helped me out. I was still in touch with Alex Jones. I was still in touch with Sargon of Akkad and everything, because I did interviews with them. However, at first, I didn't want to put myself back out there on YouTube, because I was very neutered at the beginning, because I was scared. I was kind of like, oh, if I say anything, I'm going to be in the papers again. Well, I better keep my mouth shut and everything. You know, I was a bitch. I was being a bitch back then.
Because you were being a bitch. You were trying to protect yourself, weren't you?
I don't know. I mean,
if something like that's never happened to you before.
To me, I'm embarrassed about that stage, because it felt like absolute weakness. It felt like absolute weakness. And like, looking back on it, I cringe. Like at the way I was acting back then, I was very neutered. I was a sort of like brow beaten, like beta male bitch. That's what it felt like back then, because it was just basically the situation at first like scared me.
Well, I suppose, I mean, I was in a similar situation myself in about 2016 when the Finnish establishment and the Finnish army the just went for me basically, and university but my colleague who was senile had accidentally engaged in plagiarism of military data, which had been and I was done for it because I was in Oulu and I was affiliated to a Finnish university. And nothing like this ever happened before. I'd never been publicly attacked, yeah. by all the papers. And I, you sort of, part of you thinks, well, if I just play the, you kind of don't want to believe, no, this is not going to be fair. You've been outed as being right wing, a right wing person, yeah. and they're going to do all they can to destroy you. And this is not going to be fair or reasonable in any way. And it's happening to you. And you, even if you've read the, you know, Vox Populi, book, you know, about what to do if you're being cancelled and how to act, how to behave.
I haven't actually read that.
Yeah, it's quite good. Then you just think there's a part of you that thinks surely these people are reasonable, surely. And no, they're not. Yeah. And I guess that's what the situation you were in. You know, you're kind of almost hoping naively yeah. that they're going to be fair, aren't they?
That's what I thought. I thought, oh, but maybe if I'm nice and I show everyone I'm a nice guy, everyone will read bullshit. They're not interested in that. They want to see if you actually try to be nice. They fucking hate that. They want you to.
You're
be
showing like, weakness.
Yeah, exactly. So you're basically showing the cougar your neck.
You're going for it more. Yeah. They're scenting blood. These people are vultures. They're predators. They want to kill their enemy. If their enemy shows weakness, they go for him more. I think they almost respect it if you stand up to them. They're bullies.
Yeah.
And they almost respect, like, these people that you might have had fights with when you were younger. They're bullies, and you almost respect a person you're fighting if they fight back.
Yeah.
If they don't fight back, then you just... you're nothing, you know.
Yeah, but it took me too long to just... before I kind of realised, fuck these people. Fuck these people. I'm not going to try and, like, you know, find some, like, middle ground and stuff like that with them. I just got to the point where I went, nah, fuck it, I'm going to make whatever videos I want, I'm going to say what I want. Because I was at the point now where I was burned, but it's like, how could shit get any worse? I literally can't get a job and everything. Like, I even had my house attacked during that time as well.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's what the kind left do, they attack people's houses.
Yeah, because journalists doxed where I live.
And did they say that they rang your grandmother?
Yeah, there was journalists that were harassing my grandmother, who at that time she was in her 70s, she's in her 80s now, and all that, and they were basically harassing her with phone calls. They were harassing my mum and dad with phone calls and everything as well, with one journalist even saying, I'm just going to keep calling you, and all that stuff. Like, yeah, it was just a nightmare, and that turned me off, like, journalism completely. That's a case of, unless someone has been very heavily vetted, I will not speak to them. I will not speak to journalists, I won't interact with them in any way. The only time that I'll actually sort of do that is see if there's a chance for me to go on TV and preach some free speech. I'll absolutely do that, and everyone, because I like letting everybody home at know, not home, let everyone at home know that if we don't have that, then we don't have any kind of society whatsoever.
But we don't have free speech if you can't make a joke with a dog.
Yeah, exactly. That's why. So that's just basically what it ended up becoming. I did YouTube for a while, and back then it was all the SJWs. Am I right, guys? Like that type of stuff and everything. But that was just very blackpilling, because it was just, here's why free speech is fucked this week, or this country just passed this law, and it was just blackpilling, because it was just worse and worse and worse. Things were just progressively getting worse, and then, you know, as progressivism does. But it ended up getting to the point where I decided I'm going to do some fun content. I'm going to just do videos about crazy people from history or whatever, and that's when I started my Absolute Mad Lad series, where I just spoke about people from history. A lot of people mistake me calling someone an absolute mad lad as, oh, you like this person, this is a good person. No, like, there are good mad lads and there are bad mad lads. The thing they all have in common is they're a bit fucking mental.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, I first heard that phrase, mad lad in Aberdeen.
Yeah.
And I got the distinct impression that, yeah, it was neutral. I mean, you could be a good...
If you're using it in common parlance, you're usually saying it like, oh, big joke.
Oh, you mad lad. Or,
what a mad lad. like that type of thing. But no, it's just, there are people that are insane. Like, for example, we've got, like, funny ones like Mad Jack Churchill, who basically during World War II stormed the beaches playing bagpipes, and the Germans apparently refused to shoot him because they thought he was a poor man that had gone insane. Because he's running up the beach playing the bagpipes, and the Germans were like, what the fuck? Who is this guy? So they ended up not shooting him. But then you get bad mad lads like Uday Hussein, who was just cartoonishly evil.
Mm.
Just like, he used to drive around Baghdad looking for weddings.
Yeah, that's right.
Where he would abduct the bride from her wedding and rape her that night. It's like, I don't know what it is. It's like, you have to try to be that evil. You have to go out and actually try your hardest. So he was in Mad Lads, but he's not a good man. He's one of the most evil men that have ever lived.
Mm.
Yeah, so, like, that's why I ended up doing that series, because it just gets interesting. It's interesting, like, sometimes it could be a study of evil, sometimes it's a study of heroism or something like that, or sometimes it's just a truly funny story. Like, one Mad Lad I did was Ken Allen, who was an extremely intelligent orangutan from the San Diego Zoo, who escaped all the time. He was very clever, and he was able to outsmart the zookeepers, and he escaped all the time, but he had a problem with another orangutan called Otis,
mm-hmm.
and he used to escape from his enclosure to go back to Otis's enclosure, where he was found hanging above the enclosure throwing bricks at Otis, where Otis was like screaming at him because he couldn't reach him. That was a hilarious story. That was a funny one. So that was really fun to make.
I haven't seen that. I should look into that. So anyway, so they moving back to the prosecution.
Yeah.
So you get yourself an advocate, and presumably at great expense.
Yeah.
And then what transpires?
I ended up just all the way through the trial. They had the funniest part was this really damaged the prosecution. Is the prosecution was trying to say, see how if we just went in and argued free speech off the bat, we probably would have won the case. So the prosecution's technique, so that we couldn't do that, was he was trying to drive it home like he meant what he said. This was a Trojan horse for his actual views. And he was at one point he said the phrase, picture stadiums and stadiums full of people, and he wants to gas all of them. And like we were sitting there like, what the fuck, man? Like, where's this coming? But that's prosecutors, that's their job, they make things up. So he was saying he meant what he said, so we couldn't respond with, but that's our free speech, because direct incitement to violence, unfortunately, isn't covered under free speech laws in Britain. So basically he was doing that so we couldn't make the free speech arguments. So we basically had to constantly try and prove throughout the trial that, no, that's not what I meant. It wasn't true. It wasn't a serious statement that I was trying to encourage people to kill Jews. But the prosecution kept us locked in that argument the entire time. And it was just... But the thing that really damaged the prosecution was basically Scottish intelligence got involved in the whole case. They went through my entire online profile, went through all my electronic devices, absolutely everything. And the guy had to sit up there and my lawyer went, did you find any evidence whatsoever that connects him to any far-right ideology? And the guy was like, no. We found nothing. No texts, no nothing. And I actually had some communist books at the time because I used to be a communist because we were all cringe when we were younger. And then
I wasn't a communist.
No, that's right. I was. And then I learned how society works and obviously stopped. But that really damaged the prosecution's case when Scottish intelligence went up there and went, there was nothing. No, we found absolutely nothing in there. So that kind of damaged his whole, he means this, he's far right, he's a Nazi, like that type of stuff. But convicted and found guilty anyway.
So it didn't really damage the case at all.
I know, but I did see, like, the judge did call the prosecution on some of his bullshit at some points. Like, for example, partway through the trial, the prosecutor tried to upgrade my charge. He tried to upgrade my charge. It got to the point where Section 127 of the 2003 Communications Act, the maximum time I could spend in prison is a year. But the prosecution tried to upgrade my charge to something like racially aggravated abuse or something like that, which could have seen me in prison for up to 5 years. And and that was extreme, but the judge even turned around and went, no, you're not doing that halfway through the trial. And he had a go at the prosecutor for even trying to attempt that. But that just shows the scale that they were trying to do. Like, they came right after me. Like, and they were trying their hardest to get me sent to prison. But it ended up, I got to the time where I was actually going to get the verdict. I got found guilty, obviously, but that was decided before the trial was for sure.
But think what message it sends. There's a difference between, you know, you and, well, to be fair, if we go back to 2008 or something, the person, Tommy Robinson, was just like you, just an ordinary chap from a lower middle class or working class background, you know, doing an ordinary job.
Yeah.
And the bit of the difference is that they started going after him because for whatever reason, for whatever talents he has or whatever, he's managed to establish this movement and he became very prominent and was a thorn in the side of New Labour or whatever.
To the point where he now gets arrested in pub, you know, for being Tommy Robinson.
You're charged with being Tommy Robinson. How do you plead?
Yeah.
Whereas what you're dealing with there, it's basically, I don't mean this in a pejorative way, but at that time anyway, just an ordinary Scottish bloke.
Yeah.
Who works as a security guard or whatever. And we are going to make an example of him.
And that's all I should ever have been. Like, seriously.
We are going to show society. We're going to basically... There's so many people probably doing things that they would consider crimes.
Yeah.
But this one happens to have become prominent. He's made that mistake. It's not even his mistake. It just happens to have become prominent by chance. And we're going to use this to create a chilling effect on any ability to discuss anything in Scotland that dissents from what the right-thinking man in the street is now supposed to think.
Yeah.
Which changes all the bloody time, by the way. I mean, if you go back 30 years, the right-thinking person, you could sue somebody for saying you were homosexual.
Yeah.
Because 30 years ago, even though it was legal to be gay, it was considered to be defamatory because it was like the right-thinking person thought this was a very bad thing.
Yeah.
Now you can't sue someone for saying you're homosexual. It wouldn't go anywhere. But the right-thinking person, we're going to show that right-thinking person, basically, that they need to shut up.
Yeah.
And think very, very carefully before they
joke.
Is,
yeah, the vast majority of people, like, in Scotland, like, there are right-wingers in Scotland, did you know that? There's actually quite a lot of them, because they do this thing where it's like, Tories, 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 Tories. And basically, in Scotland, if anything good happens, it's the SNP. If anything bad happens, it's the Tories, who haven't been in power in Scotland for a very, very, very long time. Right? But it's just a case of... But there are still right-wingers out there, but they don't discuss their politics at work. They don't discuss them in the pubs. They don't discuss them in the street because they're too afraid that someone, you know, some little person's going to go and tell the Stasi, or this person said some spicy things about immigration, their employer finds out and that's them in trouble. Which, and I get emails like that all the time. All the time. My employer found out my politics and now I'm in trouble. Mm. And all that, which is constant, because we did get to a point of, or you're right wing, you're against immigration, or you're not allowed a job. You're not allowed a job then. You can't work anywhere. In fact, and left wingers will actually harass your employers into firing you so that you're not able to feed yourself or your family.
Yeah, they definitely ultimately want to kill you. I mean, that's what they are, the new heretic hunters.
Yeah.
If this was the 16th century, they'd be burning you at the stake.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And worse. They are the new heretic hunters. We've got data on this. I mean, it's not me just saying it. They are, right-wing people are higher in agreeableness, that's altruism, kindness, empathy, conscientiousness, that's rule following and whatever, and mental stability.
Yeah.
Left-wing people are the opposite of that. Mentally unstable, nasty, and poor impulse control.
There was a fantastic one that I've seen about how many... it was something like 16 to 25-year-old left-wing women, like liberals and stuff like that. See the rate of antidepressants in them compared to right-wing women? Ooh.
It was over half.
Holy.
It was under 30. Yeah. This was for 3 years ago. Over half of women that identify as far left are on antidepressants, yeah.
Those things wreck your mind, though.
I've been on them.
Yeah, I've never touched them.
It depends on which antidepressant and if it's the correct dosage and all kinds of things. I don't think they wreck your mind. The pill wrecks your mind. That really messes you up.
Yeah.
But it's indicative of the fact that that they are mentally unstable.
Yeah.
And will have suicidal ideation and things like that. So, yeah, and we are, these people are, because they're mentally unstable, I guess you're power hungry because you're paranoid about the world and so you want to take control of it.
Yeah.
You're full of hate for yourself and you project that onto other people and you could, like you. And so you can quickly see how that result is having a sort of a shrill section of society that is just dominating the rest of us.
Those
just want to grill.
Yeah. I reckon, I was at the point, you know, I've went through a great political transformation over the last few years, definitely. But I definitely think if you put a big red button in front of them and says, if you press this button, right-wingers, other wives, families, children will disappear from the earth, these motherfuckers would all press it. They would all press that button a million times. Like, they would if they could get rid of us, and I think in the end that's the plan.
But the problem is that, the problem is that they need them. Because the way that they feel a sense of self-worth is by saying, I'm morally superior to these people.
Yeah.
And so when you get rid of them, and I noticed this, when the 15 years ago or something, when the British National Party was basically neutralised and made irrelevant, then Hope Not Hate, who had previously not bothered campaigning against UKIP, suddenly were turning up and harassing Nigel Farage.
Yeah.
That's now the new far right. And eventually, if you get rid of UKIP, they'll start harassing the Conservative Party. And eventually, if it's just the Labour Party, they need to harass somebody because that's how they feel good about themselves because they're bullies, they're weak people, the virtue signal.
I've always had this sort of theory where it's... See how you got like psychopathic killers, you know, your Jeffrey Dahmer and your Ted Bundys and all that type of stuff. They just had like a desire to do like awful things. I think in the age of the internet, where everything is about likes and retweets and online popularity, people ended up growing a massive ego, like psychopaths often have. Psychopaths are usually very egotistical and concerned about like other people's impressions of them. I think these people are psychopathic and have a desire to inflict pain and suffering on others, but they don't want to look bad when they do it. So if it's like, oh, but I'm doing it against racists, that, to the wider public, makes them look good. So they still get to enact out their psychopathic desires, but the ego remains intact.
Yeah, it's narcissism, yeah. Psychopathic yeah. traits, they cross over. And yeah. that, actually, there was a study on that, that they're high in narcissism, the left. Yeah. Because if you're in a left-wing society, if you like getting people telling you you're great. Yeah. You're insecure. You're mentally ill. You feel terrible. You want to kill yourself. So you deal with that by creating a false self, which is that, oh, I'm perfect. I'm morally superior to other people. Yeah. And then how can you prove you're morally superior to other people? You can attack these bad people that actually manifest traits in yourself that you don't like. That they're prepared to things that you think really.
Yeah.
But you're too weak to start a fair fight like you did in Coatbridge. You know, just punch them in the face. They're normally the people that are left wing are shorter and less muscular than right wing people. So they're like girls. So you virtue signal. That's how you get the status. You know, yeah. Covert play for status.
Yeah.
That's quite interesting when you get them one on one, and it's happened to me a few times with left wing people. When you get them actually one on one, then you're physically. Then suddenly they're all conciliatory. Maybe you're right.
I'm just here to talk.
Maybe you have a point. You weren't saying that on Twitter. You were saying that I was a Nazi.
I've experienced that. People that I've argued with on Twitter, I've met them at events, and I'm like, hello. And they are so nice to me. So nice and friendly to me. Because we're not on Twitter anymore. We're face-to-face. That's one thing.
I've had some of them that are slagging me off on Twitter, and then I found some information about this person. He couldn't understand how I'd found it out. It's quite a famous person, this. And he was really insecure about it because it's broken home. And he emailed me. This very polite. Wow, stupid of you to email your like arch enemy and look weak and ask me a favour. I'm obviously going to keep that email forever. I mean, how... Are you stupid? I mean, why would you do that? But he was so desperate, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, he's terribly. I hope we can keep this between ourselves, Dr. Dutton. I'm like, well, for now, yeah. until it's politically useful for me to release it. But that could be at any point. But it was absolutely extraordinary. So anyway, you were found guilty.
Yeah.
And what happened then?
Right before we got the sentencing. No, I didn't discuss this with my wife, and she was very angry about this. Basically, I said to my lawyer, I'm not going to pay the fine. I'm not going to do the community service. I can't exactly refuse to go to jail. They kind of grab you and force you to go. But I says, can you read this statement out? So my lawyer stood up and says, if you give him a fine, he will not pay it. If you give him community service, he will not do it. My client says that he is not a criminal and has committed no crime, you know, et cetera, et cetera, the whole statement. And the judge did kind of lean back and look at me like a little bit. But the entire time I could feel my wife's gaze in the back of my head because I was trying to get sent to prison because I knew things would kick off if I get sent to prison. So I was 100% prepared to go to
prison.
That's
an interesting conversion. So you'd moved from being just in disbelief that this had happened. And how many months did this go on for?
2 years. The whole trial went on.
And so by now you see yourself as basically a martyr and a potential magnet for interesting political...
I saw me going to jail as the spark that would light the powder keg. Mm. Like that was... Because one thing that I have noticed is... When people get angry, that's a good thing. When people start to get really, really pissed off, I think that's a good thing. You see a lot of change starting to happen, and basically other people get infected by that anger. Like, remember Dublin just a few weeks ago?
Oh, yes, that's what I was immediately thinking about when you said
that. Yeah, I'm not saying that violence and destruction and all that type of stuff's good. I'm absolutely not saying that, but... It's just, see when people start to get angry about the way things are and that lights a fire under them to do something about it. Not violence, destruction, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, sensible change within the government through the proper channels. I think it's good when people get angry about stuff like that. So that was my intent with trying to get sent to prison. But the judge did look back at me, call my bluff a little bit, and he just fined me £800. So I walked out, I left that day. Got home.
So wife, you did pay the £800?
Well, we'll get into that. Got home, wife slapped me for trying to get sent to prison. She was unhappy.
She literally slapped you?
Slapped me,
so this is a serious argument.
Now. Yeah, yeah, she was... To be fair, I didn't tell her my plan or my intention, so... She was right to be angry. You know, she was totally justified in being really, really angry about that. So it got to the point where he says, oh, you've got X amount of time to pay the £800 fine. No, not paying it. Threatening letter.
What could he have fined you? Like, what was the original kind of level of fine?
I can't remember. £5,000, I think. Okay. Was the max. I can't remember. I would need to double check that. But basically, I was getting threatening letters. And she, just to prove that this wasn't about money... By this point, my channel had built up a little bit and everything, you know, I'd grown a little bit of an audience by this point. So just to prove that it wasn't about money, I donated £800 to Glasgow Children's Hospital.
Canny.
Yeah, it's just to basically go like that, like, you know, the sick kids can have it, you know, the government's not getting it. But then threatening letter, and then he says, right, it's over the time now, a warrant's been issued for your arrest because you've not paid the fine. And I was like, cool, come and get me. But... my wedding was coming up, and I thought, crap, am I going to get arrested as it gets closer to the wedding? So what I'll do is I'll just get it over and done with now. Right, so I phoned the police on myself and says, I'm here, I'm at this address, wanted criminal, come and get me. And they said, no. And I was like, but I'm the wanted criminal with a warrant out for me, telling you exactly where I am. And they said, yeah, well, you're not violent. And I was like, oh, well, I might make a meme. Ooh, like, you know, come and get me. And they went, no, we're not going to come and get you until your name comes up in the computer. And I was just like, okay, whatever then. And then woke up one morning to my wife going, why did none of the bills come out of the account? And I went, what? And I looked at the account. Fuckers just seized it. Seized it from my account. Now, my lawyer went apeshit when that happened because my lawyer says legally they are supposed to tell you and notify you.
Are you ready for the future of the West?